You're listening to The Art of Imperfect Adulting. I'm your host, Amy Stone. Here, I share stories from real people navigating the adventure that I call adulting. Are you ready? Me too. Let's do this. Hello, friends. In this episode, I am going to introduce you to Stephanie Pelish. She's my new friend. And we talk about coming back from rock bottom. So often, rock bottom is used to talk about sobriety, but this is a conversation about family and relationships. I think that a lot of people will resonate with some of the things that Stephanie and I talk about, including how hard some things can really be, what it takes to create a powerful support network, and what it really looks like to rebuild. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. So let's get to it. Stephanie Pelish, welcome to Imperfect Adulting.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so happy you're here. Are you ready for a chat?
I am. Let's
go. Yay! Let's go. Let's do it. All right. So I try to begin every interview I do by creating an opportunity for connection between you and me and you and the audience. So I begin with two super gentle, fun, get to know you softball pitch questions. First, what part of the world do you call home?
I am in Pennsylvania, right outside of Philadelphia.
Ah.
So in the suburbs of Philly.
Very nice. And have you always been there, or is this a place that you
I
moved
grew
to?
Up about an hour and a half northwest of here in a town of 2,000 people, one blinking light. My family owned the grocery store. So very small town living is where I came from. And my husband is from two towns over. And so when we got married and decided to have kids, we wanted to be more suburban and have some more going on for our kids and for ourselves. So that's what
more
brought
than one traffic
here.
Light. All right. So the next question,
blinking light.
More than one, oh yeah. Good correction. So the next question is, I give you a chance to tell us as much or as little about the people you live with in your family as you want to share with the audience. So you walked right into that one.
Yeah. So it's my husband and I, we've been together since we were in high school. So a long time, and we'll kind of talk about the trajectory of our relationship as we go through this conversation today. But then we have four kids, and they are 14, 12, 10, and our youngest will be 5 in about 2 or 3 weeks. And so, yeah, we've got four kids, and they keep us very busy.
Very, very busy.
I say
very,
my girls
very
are
busy.
My bookends, and the boys are in the middle. So we've got a 14 and 4-year-old girl and 12 and 10-year-old boy.
All right. Very, very cool. All right. So today we're going to talk about an experience in your life that pushed you to make some changes, take some risks, and eventually help other women do the same thing. Does that sound good?
Sounds great.
All right. Let's do it. All right. So first, let's rewind the clock. And I'll try and gently walk you through the story. And here's the fun part about this. I don't actually know this story. I'm hearing it for the first time with everybody else. what I know is that this started shortly after you had your fourth child. And so we have four kids in my family too. And so one of the things about this that people who are listening to have kids already know, and those who don't may not know or maybe do know, every time you add a kid to the mix, it is an exponential upgrade of how complicated your life is. Exponential. It's not like a little ramp up. It's like massive. But take us back to that time in your life, right after you had your fourth kid, and tell us, not the meat of the story, but give us first what your life was like then, and what was going on, that kind of thing. Like, what was set the scene?
Yeah. So that's kind of like the culmination of the story.
Okay.
So I'm going to back up to after we had our third child. We had our third baby. So I had a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a newborn. We moved. We took the money that we had to put into our house for renovations. We decided to buy a business with family members. And very quickly, that started to bleed money.
I'm like trying to have my poker face on when you said that, like you went into business with family. I'm like,
Well, and so I mentioned we had one grocery store, my family owned the grocery store. So I watched my dad and his siblings run a business together and grew up in that kind of environment. But doing it ourselves was very different. And we definitely preserved family relationship over business many times. And so we had three kids. We had a business that was draining our finances, and we were both working outside of that business, like having careers. And I was now looking back, I see very anxious, very depressed, and telling my husband we needed to have a fourth baby because in my gut, I knew that there was another baby coming.
Okay.
And so 2019, we closed the business, and my husband said, fine, we'll have another baby. And I got pregnant immediately.
Oh, the
And
enthusiasm.
right. And so I kind of panicked, like, oh, wait, this happened really quickly. Like, I've been talking about it for years, but now all of a sudden, here we go. We're going to have another baby. And in January of 2020, our fourth baby was born.
Okay.
And my husband and I never really got on the same page as to what it would look like to keep growing our family and what we wanted. We wanted very different things. And so he kind of, I'm going to say, gave me the baby to appease me. And
Okay.
there's more to it than that, right? But so 2020, have a baby. I was going to figure out what I was going to do next in my career because I wasn't really happy with what I was doing. And 6 weeks later, we went into lockdown, and my
Yeah.
husband and I were stuck at home together with all four kids and really struggled. And all of the unhealthy, all of the toxic patterns, all of the things that weren't working really got highlighted. And so 2020, really until now, but 2020 was my, I can't do this anymore. I need to find myself. I need to give myself support because as a mom, as a woman, I mentioned, like anxious, depressed. I was drained. I had
Yeah.
nothing to give and yet still wanted more and to take on more. And so the last couple of years has been my journey of finding myself, finding my footing, finding better support for myself, and also offering everything that I learned to the women in my community, the women around me. And now I've always been an entrepreneur at heart. And so now my community looks like women entrepreneurs. And so that's where
Very
we're at
cool.
today. Long story short.
Long story short. All right. So there's a lot to unpack there. First of all, I don't think this is an unusual story that 2020 pushed us in ways, and like we use the year and we use the forced shutdown as like it was a common experience that many of us shared, but it really did put a lot of people in a position where they're there's like their sort of coping mechanism stopped working. Like the
Yeah.
things that they were using to buffer and to do things just didn't work in the new situation.
Well, and
And
I'll say for us too, 2020, because of the shutdown, really allowed me space to heal myself and to figure it all out because I was home on maternity leave.
right.
But because my maternity leave then didn't have an end date because all of the things with, are the kids going back to school? I have a
Right.
baby. What do you do? Right. And so, because I could take my focus off of what was I going to do next, I still had a lot of anxiety about what I was going to do next. But COVID actually was a really nice cushion for my husband and I. And it took away all of our kids' activities. So,
Yeah.
it gave us time and space to really be together without running every which way.
Every which way. One of my favorite lockdown stories and virtual school. So my kids were adults, and then I had one in high school and one in middle school with lockdown and virtual school. But I had a friend who called me up, and he's younger than I am, and his kids are younger. And he called me up, and he's like, "Amy, how am I supposed to work and do virtual preschool?" because I had a kid in preschool, and I was like, dude, what is virtual preschool? Like, the entire point of preschool is to get the kid out of your house and under
It's show and tell, and
Right. And that's
your
what he
teacher's
told me.
trying to just keep you entertained for 10 and 15 minutes so that you could see your
Exactly.
friends.
Exactly. And he's telling me about circle time. And, but of course, the preschooler cannot do it on his own. And I was like, dude, no, like, don't. Like, you're gonna have to hire somebody. If you need to work at the same time, if you have to be doing other things, you're gonna find somebody else to do it. I don't have a solution for you for how to get a preschooler to manage their online classroom by themselves. So good. And I just love that. I love that story because it's such a funny thing because everybody was trying absolutely the best they could to get through it and nobody knew what they were doing. And just put us in a weird thing. All right. So you mentioned in your guest submission that somewhere in this, your marriage hit what you call rock bottom. And I want to, if with your permission, I want to dig into this a little bit, particularly because the research is that almost like a lot of relationships go through this, and more than half of relationships will acknowledge it by dissolving the relationship. That's how we know that everybody goes through this, right? Like, that's how we know. But the ones who don't dissolve, they probably also, like, this is a thing that happens. This is like the dirty secret that we don't tell each
Yeah,
other when
absolutely.
we like are going through this process. Like, this happens. So you mentioned the first thing I was going to ask you already answered. I was going to say, hey, when did you meet your husband? You guys were kids.
Yeah, we were 17, 18 years old, and isn't life great when you're 17 and 18 and you have a new boyfriend? And then we did the long distance for a long time. And so that actually. My husband's a really good communicator on the phone when he
Okay.
kind of has that separation. So we would talk on the phone for hours when we were in college. We were long distance for 5 years. And so the first like five of the first 6 years together were long distance. And so we spent hours on the phone together. And then we moved in together. And then we started figuring out finances together. And then we bought a house. And then we started having kids. And all of those things that were fun started to become stressful. And then, like I said, those finances became more stressful because now, one, we had three kids to support. Now we had a business that we went into idealistically of this business was going to support us and give back to us as much as we needed to give to it as well. And it did not, it drained us. And so it was just one more thing that was taking from us. And so, yeah, it was a lot of triggering our unhealthy patterns that we just didn't have good coping skills, myself in particular. I didn't have great regulation skills. And, my day job, what I went to college for was I'm a pediatric occupational therapist.
Okay.
I taught families how to regulate their children. But at home, I was extremely dysregulated.
Did
I
you
was
know?
no. And
Okay,
what I
all
mentioned, well, did I know? Yes. Was I getting validation on it? No. So when I was saying, like, this doesn't feel right, I don't feel good, my husband's response was, and he has much better responses now, but his response was, you're always this miserable. My mom's response was, pray more.
right. Okay.
My doctor's response was, but you're a super mom. And so I would go see my clients. I would work with these moms, and they'd be like, you must be a great mom. And in my mind, I was like, oh, good thing you can't see me at home because I was melting down. My kids were having tantrums, but I was the queen of tantrums. I was having bigger tantrums. And so I could top my kids' tantrum. Super, super healthy, right? But I didn't have anybody saying, like, Steph, this is like, there is a solution to this. And when I would say to my girlfriends or those other people, nobody related to that. Nobody was hearing my struggle in that. And so I wasn't getting help. And so then in 2020, when my husband was like, I don't think this has worked well, he said, this is not working for me. I was like, I know, but no, like, this has to work. We've got four kids and all of these responsibilities together, regardless of whether or not our relationship, if we're married or not married, we still have all of these things together. So no matter what happens, we have to figure this out together. And we really took a team approach, which some days didn't feel like a team approach. It felt very much me saying, like, we need to do this thing. But, you know, it also really pushed me to start therapy. And I was already in the personal development world, but in a very toxic relationship with personal growth, because I was depressed. I was looking for answers outside of myself. So any program I could find, I was learning, and every book I could read, I was reading, but then I wasn't feeling any better. So then I was feeling the shame and guilt that other people got something from it, and I still felt terrible about
I mean,
myself.
I want to zoom in on a couple of things you did, because you touched on some things which are really big threads in the parenting adult space for personal development. And one of those is the disconnect between the high performing caregiver who asks for help and all she gets is validation that she's high performing, instead of what you really need, which is the, hey, listen, tell me a little bit more about how you're doing. And it's stunning how deep and how widespread that is. There's a really scary little bit of research about like loneliness and modern parenting, which is that millennial parents are being called the loneliest parents.
I was surrounded by people, but I felt so alone and isolated. And I also have ADD, which I only after that learned about and only recently got a diagnosis. And again, like that really impacts my anxiety and depression as well. And so all of those playing into each other without me really recognizing that's what was going on made me feel all alone, because other people couldn't relate to me. They didn't have all of those things going on the same way that I did. And so when I was saying, like, I can't do this anymore, they're like, well, you just have to keep going. Like, sometimes you have to do things that you don't want to do.
Right.
And
Which
it was
is, I
literally
mean,
shutting me down.
Right. That is like one of the most painful experiences of young child caregiving, right? Like, so that whole nighttime world of parenting when, you know, like at 2:30 in the morning, nobody else is there, right? Like, nobody else is around. And it's just such that realization in the middle of the night, you're just like, it's just me and this small person who is not much help right now, you know?
Right. Who has no appreciation for what you're
No
doing and is
appreciation. They're the
probably
black
screaming
hole
and yelling
of,
at you.
No, absolutely. Because that's all they can do, right?
Which is
I'm
what
like,
they're
it's a good
supposed
thing
to
you're
do.
cute,
That's how
you
they
know?
communicate, right?
Yeah, it's a good thing you're cute, because otherwise I'd toss you out the window. Absolutely. But you're not allowed to say things like that without getting judgment, which is what makes it hard. And so I just wanted to zoom back around on that for anybody who ever hears this to know that, and this is such an unhelpful thing. It is a very common occurrence. It's normal. Like, I hate it when I'm in pain and struggling and somebody's like, well, that's normal. And I'm like, I don't care if it's normal. What I need
it
is a tool.
normal, but that doesn't mean that it has to be that way. And that's the piece you just hit the head right there. Because for me, like, I heard other people say, like, well, it's normal to have a hard time. But I wasn't just having a hard time. I was drowning. And I was using that word. I was saying, I'm drowning. And again, like, it was like, well, just keep doing the thing. Like, it's just the stage you're in. Like, you have three young kids and you're working and you're doing all of these things. But then I could see other people doing more and not feeling that struggle.
Or not looking like they
or
felt.
not
That's
looking. Well, but even my girlfriends, like, they were doing similar things that I was, but they weren't struggling in the same way that I was. And so I would share, but then felt like I would overshare, because then they didn't share
they
or
didn't share
resonate
back.
back.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it was really a tricky space to be in. And so it's part of why I talk about it too, because I want people to know, like, hey, you're not the only one that goes through that experience. You're not the only one that wants to throw the baby because you don't know what
One of
else to
my
do.
One of my favorite, I don't even know if they still give this advice. So like, there's a whole thing about like shaking baby is a whole like thing with new babies. And one of my favorite like little things was it's like, don't shake the baby, but just gently jiggle them for 2.5 years. Like, you know, it's like, don't shake them, but do jiggle them softly, like perpetually for 2 years. The and the difference is significant, right? So the reality is, right, there is a very, very true thing here that modern parents, modern moms are judged by their actions and how their kids show up in the world. Like we are. Like you can't ignore that, right? And it's
Absolutely.
that is a thing that really hits new parents hard. It is in a heteronormative relationship, it is much more on the mom than anybody else. It magnifies in marginalized groups. They have more of that. And it's a weight that is really, really hard to set down. What do you know? So what, I have two questions. And I'm stumbling over my words, and I apologize for that. I have two things. What do you think the pull was to have another baby? Like, so if you knew you were under stress and you knew the stressors were so much that you were drowning, looking back, what do you feel like the pull was? Like, let's add another kid. Because one of the
So,
things I always tell people is I'm like, kids are wonderful and I love them, but there's one thing they don't do, and that's simplify your life.
no, definitely not. So from my core, what I really think it was one, a piece of it was me looking for more love and
Okay.
looking for more completion, but I really wanted my oldest daughter to have a sister.
Okay.
I would say to my husband, like, we're going to have a fourth and it's going to be a girl. And
Like you
he's
were
like,
calling it in.
I knew my first and fourth were a girl. I just, before I was ever pregnant,
Okay,
like,
yeah.
I just had this intuitive feeling with them. Whereas with the boys, I was like, I don't know, it could go either way, which means it's probably not a girl.
Right.
But I just so strongly knew before I was pregnant, before she was even born, like I could just feel her, and no pressure on the baby of the family, but she really brought a lot of healing into our family. The way that I then was able to show up for her brought me so many better tools to show up for my older kids. I
Right.
really struggled with my first. I really struggled. And I think part of it probably was too me wanting another chance at raising a girl, like wanting to do it better, because the first one, I was so, again, anxious and avoidant with her, all of the things. And now we have such a better relationship. You know, she's 14, so we have our challenges, but so night and day different than what it was 5 years ago,
That
3 years
is really
ago,
beautiful.
even.
That is really beautiful. It says a lot about you and your character as a person that you are willing to talk about that you are aware of the challenges that you did, and also that you pushed yourself to improve. The beautiful thing about relationships, I think, between people and also between parents and children is that most of the time, like it's not always true, but most of the time there are opportunities to repair and improve. And I bring that up because specifically, and you use the word attachment, and so I'll throw it out there. Specifically, when it comes to like various forms of attachment theory, there's a lot of pressure because there are people who will tell you, hey, if you don't nail this in the first 6 weeks or 6 months of your baby's life, you're screwed. You've messed it up forever.
So
No
as the
pressure,
pe
mom.
right. So as a pediatric occupational therapist, as the oldest of four, as the oldest of 18 cousins, as someone who babysat, who did all of the things with kids, I then had my first baby. I knew logistically what to do with a baby. That did not, like, it didn't bother me when she rolled over the wrong way, or like none of those things that new moms get anxious about bothered me. I was like, they're fine. They're kids. They're resilient. They'll figure it out. But what I didn't recognize at the time was how much I was struggling with my attachment with her. It was 7 weeks until I finally like felt a bond to her. And I just remember sitting in at my in-laws. It was Easter, and she was probably about 4 weeks old. And my father-in-law was sitting across the room holding her. And I just remembered thinking, like, How is she over there? And I'm over here. Like, we're separate now, but she was a part of me. Like, but I also didn't have the words to put that together. And so, as a parenting expert, as a development expert, how could I not create a bond with my baby? And for my boys, it was much easier for me to create that bond with them. And so then, again, till I had my other daughter, that's when I went back and created a better bond with my older one.
Do you think that you had a little bit of depression after the first one?
Oh yeah,
Yeah,
the
because,
depression and the anxiety kind of ran in
so I'm
pre
going
to
to
that, but definitely postpartum after my
postpartum,
birth,
right? Which that's another
100%.
thing that we do a bad job of telling. Well, hopefully we do a better job now, but it's a thing that
Well, I
when
knew
I
all
was
the
young.
answers to write on my screener, right? Like, I didn't always feel those things. And like, maybe I felt them a little bit, but when it's a yes or no question, no, like, I don't feel like I want to harm my baby because, of course, I don't feel like I want to harm my baby. But at 2 o'clock in the morning, yeah, I kind of do want to throw my baby like in the crib and just leave her there and ignore her. So
Well, right.
the
And sometimes,
question, but that's not what the question asked
that's
me,
not what the
right?
question is, right?
And so that's where more awareness and more conversations about, like, of course, you don't really want to harm your baby, but are you feeling like this isn't working right?
Right. Do you
There's
have a
something that you
flash
haven't
of, I wish
quite
this
figured
wasn't?
out. Yeah.
So I'm very fortunate I did not experience the postpartum depression, but a stunning, it's a hugely under-researched, under-publicized thing. I'm not going to get the data right, so I won't do it, but it is a thing that a lot of people feel, a lot of people feel, and you are already isolated and all of those things, and it's very, very hard to identify. It's very, very hard to get support. It's very, very hard to do all of those things. And there's such a wave of like the magic socialization pressure, which is like, yay, you've had a baby. You're supposed to feel all this magic thing. And I always tell people, I'm like, I did not have postpartum depression, but I felt like I had been hit by a semi truck for like 24 hours. Right? It's like, it is not like, it's
Right.
like, thank you for, being here. I mean, it is a very, very tough and overwhelming experience. And that's just the biology of, making it happen.
Yeah, my
And
husband
so,
says he's like, I didn't know what having a baby would do to Steph. He's like, I didn't realize she would need recovery time and like that. Nobody talked about my recovery and what my husband would need to do for me after having a baby. And then we had more kids. And so he also had to show up for the other kids when I had a baby. And so again, he's now showing up for them, not for me. And we didn't have family close by, we didn't have a close-knit community. And one of the things that I learned later was community is great and support is great, but I had to find paid support and paid community, which again was also a stressor and not something that we talk about. Is like, yeah, now in 2025, you need a paid community. It
That
just
is
doesn't
a really
exist
interesting
in the
thing.
same way.
No, I think, I mean, and one of the things that 20, maybe not 2020, but 2021 did is redefine how we come together in both good and bad ways. Like, I mean, we've learned a lot as a modern people, like, because you and I are connected over Zoom, which is amazing, right? It is not the same as meeting with somebody face to face, and different people have different ways of doing that. So all right, so how did you, so today you use the word rock bottom. When would you say that you realized that it was rock bottom? Like, what was, if you can, this is a terrible question, you may not be able to answer it, but what was there a moment where you were like, all right, I don't know what it is, but something has to change?
So I think there were two in particular. One, I just remember I was in my pajamas, sitting in my, like, had my robe on, sitting in my kitchen, scrolling. And it was probably 10 or 11 o'clock on a Saturday or Sunday morning. I'm 7 months pregnant and I have zero desire to do anything. And my husband and my three older kids are just like moving around me. My husband's making them breakfast. He's annoyed because I'm not doing anything. And I couldn't get myself out of that. Like I was really stuck there. And so I think that was like the first time where I really realized how paralyzed I was. But again, I'm 7 months pregnant. So I kind of put a lot of it on the pregnancy.
Sure.
And then, like I said, we had a baby. 6 weeks later, we go into lockdown. About 6 weeks after that is when my husband came and said, "This isn't working. Like what we're doing is not for me, and maybe we can fix it. I don't think we can, but I think I want out." And I was like, "No."
And so
So
that was the second moment.
that was what really triggered
So, because
me to
that was
then
the
find.
mirror that was showing you the level of dysfunction is really what it was. Somebody showed. So, yeah, and there's a difference for people who are listening, like, and you know this as somebody, but just to reflect back, there's a very significant difference between not wanting to do something and that physical sensation of depression, which is I am unable to move. And if you've never experienced the difference, which I'm one of the people who can count themselves lucky enough to not have experienced it myself, you just kind of have to take it on faith that that is something that other people do experience. It's not a choice that you're making. It's like this is like, you know, this is
No, so right. And so it's that fight, flight, or fright. And my body goes into shutdown. I go into that flight. I want to leave, but then I also go into freeze. And so when I'm in freeze, I actually have to go back through that flight or fight and then come back into a regulated state. But that fight or flight feels so uneasy too that it's much easier for me to stay in freeze. And what that looked like for me was I would take naps all the time. But again, I'm a mom, so I'm laying down and taking a nap
Right, you
because
were really
I'm
tired.
exhausted. I was really tired, but I was also avoiding, and I was also overstimulated and overwhelmed, and all of the things. And so, yes, is taking a nap like okay to do when you're tired? But when I was taking a nap every day,
I love
and
naps.
like, so do I. I could take a nap still every day, but I could nap for an hour to an hour and a half and still not wake up feeling reset. It wasn't resetting for me. It was shutting down. My body was saying, "I'm overwhelmed. I'm overstimulated. Let's shut down. Okay, we need to come back online. Oh my gosh, now I need to do the like a dinner plan for the kids, or now the kids are getting off the bus, or now I need to clean up from the mess that they just left because I checked out." And so it wasn't actually resetting for me. It was checking out for me. And that difference was really, really pivotal too in my journey in learning more about what my healthy coping tools are.
No, and there's no expectation like that you should have healthy coping skills. Like you know, everybody has coping skills and you have them, you know, but they're not necessarily the ones that are healthy, and the ones that worked when we were 10 don't always work when we're 35. So there's always a chance
And
to
what's
learn new
healthy for
ones.
one person or on one day can be unhealthy for another person or on another day, right? Like a nap is
Yes.
great,
Yes,
right? When
absolutely.
you're
Yes.
tired and you need to reset, a nap is great. But when you're avoiding because you're overwhelmed and you don't have anything left to give and you're not actually getting the support you need,
Yeah. So let's
it's
talk
kind of
about
like,
support. Let's talk about support. So, all right. So when I talk to people about support when they make changes, there's two parts of it, right? What is the support you had at the time that helped you make the change, right? And then looking back, what do you know now or can you see now that you wish you would have had as you went through this process? So some of the supports you had, you've mentioned you had a friend group. Right. So you had a friend group and you and your husband had family nearby. So those are the two common things. No, I'm wrong about that.
No, so our family was not nearby. They're they and they were both of our parents were or both sets of parents were all working full time as well. So my mom could come if I threw a big enough tantrum because I was so overwhelmed. I could get my mom to show up to help me with whatever the immediate problem was. But again, I didn't have a way to just say, "Hey, mom, could you come help?" And she would say yes. I would have to like be over dramatic, having a tantrum, and finally she would be like, "Fine, I can figure it out and I'll come help you tomorrow to do this one thing. So we didn't really have family help.
Okay.
We hired a nanny at some point, which she was a godsend. And she, like, I said this at the time, but looking back, like, she really helped my husband and I survive and probably maintained our marriage from like 2014 until 2019. And then my youngest went to kindergarten because she would do things like clean up around the house or throw food in the crock pot for us to have dinner or throw in a load of laundry when she was here. She was doing those little things that were so overwhelming to me. And so when we lost that support, we didn't need her for the kids anymore, but I also lost that house task support, which is still not, but was not my strength. Those things I can avoid very easily. And with ADHD, I can just kind of like,
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Something else to do.
So yeah, and you talked about it like this. This is the unspoken modern challenge, right? I mean, on one side, people talk about it all the time, but on the other side, we don't really talk about it. Like, so people talk about it all the time how childcare is expensive and school is expensive, but the bigger conversation about that is that modern support networks really are for a lot of people, they're people we hire. And so what, when you're looking back, what support do you wish you had had? Not necessarily like in the getting by, but in making the transition, when you realized you were overwhelmed and you realized that you didn't know how to dig yourself out of this hole and the stakes were really high because your husband, gave you
I
the,
really, Yeah, I really wish in 2014 that I started therapy. I said to my mom at one point, like, I think I should start therapy. And again, you know, just pray more. Like,
right, go to
therapy
church.
Was, right, go to church. It wasn't viewed by her as something that was important. And then when I would mention it to my husband, like, he would just kind of be like, whatever. Right. And so I also didn't have, quote unquote, a trauma or an incident to push me to therapy. So I wish I would have known that I could just go to therapy because I wanted to go to therapy.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's a good one, actually.
And
That's a good
because
one.
I didn't, so many other things happened in between that sent me further down in my journey
Sure.
that could have possibly been avoided. Right? Like, I could have learned about my own anxiety, about my own depression, about my ADD much earlier. Now, you know, the whole thing of like things happen for a reason and we have our journey so that we can learn the lessons the way we need to learn the lessons. But I just wonder, like, had I had support or had I had somebody validating that my feelings were, while normal, not necessarily, I don't want to use the word healthy, but healthy.
Constructive.
Like, yes.
Yeah.
And that somebody could help me to navigate a better thought process, a better action plan, which is what I was trying to do with the personal development world.
Right. And we go
Right.
to personal development because we don't have the access to necessary. It really is. The mental health industry is designed to kick in after something happens.
Right.
That's like, to be very like mechanical about it.
Right.
It's
And
like,
I don't have any big like capital T trauma from childhood that I needed to resolve. You know, then in therapy, I realized, well, there's some little T trauma there that I need to resolve. But there was nothing, again, that in my history, you know, I just had that stereotype. I had that expectation that only broken people
Yes.
need therapy.
Right. Exactly. And it's a systemic thing. So there we go. All right. So that is very good. That's actually, it's interesting because that is after doing all of the things that, that I have done, like people used to ask me all the time, like, hey, if you had to do this over, would you do the same thing? And at first I was like, yeah, that's not a really healthy question because I can't redo the things like time doesn't work that way. But then after like years and years of being asked a version of that question, I finally realized, I was like, you know what, actually there is one thing, like I wish that I had thought about, you know, doing the work on myself again, like another wave of like work on myself, because the better we know ourselves and the stronger our tools are, the better we're able to show up in our relationships. But that being said, it's not actually a wish for myself to go back in time. And I don't think yours is necessarily either. It's like we share this so the people who are earlier in their timeline can maybe make the
Yeah,
improvement for themselves.
absolutely. And recognizing too that a book, while it's great, a book doesn't see you. A
You
book
have to
doesn't
have
know
enough
you, right? Like
ability to be
I
able to
kept
do it.
reading the next popular book, but none of those books were saying, "Hey, Steph, you have anxiety, depression, and ADHD. Like, let's get those resolved, and then all of these pieces might actually work for you."
And ADHD and those things, sometimes the way they show up mimic the signs of other things, like little T trauma and big T trauma. So it can be complicated. And yeah, I know it's very helpful to work with other people. And so that is very good. All right. So we could talk about this all day. Brevity is not my strength, but I've got to move it along here. Eventually, you talked about this at the start, but eventually you did decide to turn this into a business of your own. What made you decide? Actually, I might, now that
The
we've had this
perfect
conversation.
segue.
Yeah, no,
Well,
exactly.
this is a perfect segue because I was actually so wanting to be an entrepreneur. I went to a business retreat with my business coach and I left my family for 5 days, went to Vermont, and I sat at a table every day with 12 other women who were women entrepreneurs who talked about big dreams and validated mine. And I was like, this is what I
There you
need. I don't
go.
need my husband asking me what the numbers are. I don't need my mom saying like, "Well, are you praying on it? Like, what are you going to do? I don't know
Poor
what I'm going
mom, if
to
she
do."
hears this,
I
she's going to
know
be
my
like,
mom.
oh.
She's great. And we've done some healing ourselves and have had some great conversations too, but really, like, those were the two people that I was looking for support from. And so when I showed up at this retreat and had women who got it, and women who also had big dreams, but hadn't reached like the million-dollar business, they were still at the beginning. I came home and was like, where are these people? Because they have to be around. And so what started just as me meeting with friends on Fridays for coffee just to like hang out. I don't drink coffee, so tea. We were drinking tea. But we would meet on a Friday and just talk about our business or what we wanted to do in our businesses, even though they weren't quite yet a business. And it started to grow organically. And by word of mouth, the teacup entrepreneurs started to grow. And so that's what my business is today, is I'm a coach of women. And one of my programs is called Teacup Entrepreneurs, where women come in for connection, collaboration, and growth. So no matter where you're at in your business, you can come and find like networking, masterminds. We're doing like a big annual planning event. It's January right now, so we're having a big like plan your best year. We have a Women's Day event coming in March. And so it's just really exciting to see where I had really poor support, how I've now built a business that supports me and the woman that I was.
Yeah, be the change. You created
Right?
what you needed for yourself. Absolutely. So you have a fabulous thing for the audience, which is taking your side hustle to a business, right? So those are, and we will put the link to that in the show notes. And also, if you're on the email list for Imperfect Adulting, which is the best way to get all these special offers, you'll get it there. Throw out your, what's the best way for people to reach you? What's a social channel that people can reach you on
Yeah,
or
so
a website?
I'm all over Facebook, Stephanie Pellish, Pellish. You can find me on Facebook. And then on Instagram, I'm thriving through motherhood with thriving underscore through underscore motherhood. And so you can find me there. And then you can also find Teacup Entrepreneurs on Instagram and on Facebook as well. So you find me a lot on Facebook, but I'm in a lot of the places.
And you know, they're kind of the same thing now. They're like they're attached, which is
Right?
helpful some days and
It's
not
all
so helpful other
connected, right?
times. Exactly. All right. So now I'm going to ask you, to close this up, I'm going to ask you three questions. They're supposed to be rapid fire. Neither you or I is really good at the whole short answer brevity thing. So we're going to see how this goes just for fun. All right. Today, are you an early bird or a night owl?
Well, today I was up at 4 a.m. because my brain decided to get up. So,
when do you like to get up? Naturally, are you an early? You like to stay up late, or you like to get up early?
Probably more late.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Very cool. All right. You have a fabulously busy family and business. What is one hobby that you have for yourself outside of family and business?
Oh, I love to read.
Okay. What
Romance
kind of
novels are my thing.
You read books, or you listen to them in on like audio?
No, I do it all on my Kindle.
Oh, Kindle is the greatest. I love it.
Yeah,
I
I just
love
have
it.
the Kindle app on my phone so I can read it. I have 5 minutes while I'm waiting for a kid. I just open up and read. I read over 90 books last year. So
I'm always impressed that people track that. I don't have, I like, I read all the time,
Kindle
but I don't
tracks
have.
it.
Kindle
I
tells you?
don't.
Oh, I have to
Yeah.
figure out how to, okay, I'm gonna have to figure out how to get them to tell me. All right, so very good. Okay, so now think about your oldest friend that you are still in contact with. Do you remember how old you were when you met them?
I feel like this is a loaded question because I've had a lot of changes in friendship. So I feel like it's
Okay.
a rapid fire question. But the friend I see the most is my husband. We've been together a long time. And so I was probably 13 when I met him.
Very cool. All right. That counts. That counts. It wasn't meant to be like a trick invasive question. It was just like, you know, some
No.
people are still friends with people they met in like elementary school. And
Yeah.
every time somebody tells me that, I'm like, I don't even think I
I
remember the
do. I
names of
do have a
anybody
friend
else.
that we don't live close, so I don't see her much, but we call each other. We were womb friends. Our moms were pregnant together. And so we joke that we used to communicate through the womb when our moms
When
got
your moms
together.
are friends.
So,
That's adorable. That's
yeah.
absolutely adorable. All right, Stephanie Palish, this has been great. Thank you for being a guest on
Thank
the
you. I
Imperfect Adulting.
really love this conversation, and I hope people hear it and resonate and find some healing just in the sense that they're not the only ones going through the struggles, that it's all imperfect and we're all just trying to figure it out day by day, right?
I know that is the secret, right? That is the secret. That's everybody's doing it. You think that you're the only one. The secret is, oh, nope. All right. Thank you for listening today. I hope that you enjoy the show. And before I go, I want to encourage you to become a bigger part of the conversation. Obviously, subscribe wherever you're listening to the show. Listen to more episodes. That'd be great. Obvi again. Please write a review and tell your friends about the show. That truly is a great help for getting the show in front of new people. Okay, but more fun for you yourself, head over to imperfectadulting.com and join the email community. You'll get some free stuff right away, and that way you'll begin to get the emails about the podcast. This includes the links for the special offers from the guests, and it's the only way to get that. Also, if you aren't in the mood to listen, I actually include an article directly in those emails. Whee! Now, if you love this and you crave more time with me, Amy, as a coach, a mentor, or just adultier adult, numero uno, check out The Village. If you have a story you want to share with the listeners, I'd love to hear from you. I have an open application. Just let me know you want it. And that's a wrap for today. Until next time, remember, the journey is the destination. Ralph Waldo Emerson said that, not me. Well, until just now, I did just say it. But what I want you to hear today is that if your adulting journey isn't going the way you expected, that may not mean that you're lost. It may just mean that you're on your way. This is Amy Stone, signing off. The Imperfect Adulting Podcast is created and produced by Amy Stone and Amy Says So. Anything expressed on this show is offered as entertainment, and the views of the guests may not always represent the ideas and viewpoints of the host. That's me. Amy does not intend or hold herself out to provide professional advice or recommendations of any kind. In the end, you and you alone need to make those kinds of decisions based on your personal and individual situation, needs, circumstances, and comfort level.